What's up, founders, and welcome to the In Demand podcast, where we talk all about how to troubleshoot growth for your PLG SaaS. I'm your co-host, Asia Arangio, the CEO and founder of Demand Maven.
And I'm Kim Talarczyk, client services manager at Demand Maven, where we help SaaS companies reach their toughest growth milestones.
All right, Kim, let's get into it. Kim.
Asia.
Let's talk about troubleshooting growth, because this is a question and really a concept that comes up a lot in our work. And it's really what I've been hanging my hat on for the last 7 years of running Demand Maven of here's how we approach our projects. But also this is rooted in a core concept that I think is somewhat also what's a good word for like, it's not that it's confused. It's cryptic, I feel like.
Yes. People don't know what it means. Or some people we work with don't understand.
Right.
Like, what do you do?
We
troubleshoot growth?
Right. And I think part of this is because when they hear the word growth, they're thinking growth marketing, which is a completely different function. And growth marketing is really all about efficiency within specific marketing channels and programs. So for example, a growth marketer is going to, traditionally speaking, and usually like where I find the most growth marketers actually aren't in SaaS necessarily, usually like they're in e-commerce, but usually a growth marketer is coming in and they're looking at efficiency of specific channels and they're figuring out which channel can I explode basically, like in a good way, like which one can I like, which one has the best lever that I can pull to make this thing like really go, whether that's SEO or paid or whatever it is. So growth marketers are a specific type of marketer. And
does that growth marketer then execute within that channel, or are they typically someone that is doing the analysis and then saying, okay, pass it off to someone else?
I see both. Like, so sometimes you'll see like growth marketing managers where maybe there's a channel or two that they really own, but they outsource others. But I've also seen scenarios where the growth marketer does it all like by themselves with maybe like a little bit of support from contractors here and there. And then I've also seen like in some like more scaled out organizations, maybe the growth marketing manager works with specific agencies. And keeping in mind though, that like that growth marketing manager may also report to a director or a VP of marketing or a CMO. And maybe that growth marketing manager also works with like a demand generation manager and maybe also works with like a content marketing manager. And maybe also, so like that growth marketer really like their arms are wrapped around the channels and the programs. And like,
right.
They're like, what levers can I pull within that?
Yes. Other marketing, of course, is happening. A big strategy is at play. That growth marketer is specifically targeting a certain channel or saying which channel can we tackle and optimize.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, a head of growth or a growth strategist or a chief growth officer, depending on type of organization you're in, but someone who's focused on growth, usually the most common role that we see here is like a head of growth, or like it's rare that you see it like a chief growth officer, but you might also see like a VP of growth. Usually what that role is it's implied that it's not purely marketing, although that growth lead could certainly look at marketing, but they're looking at efficiency across the whole business. So not just marketing efficiency, but they may also be looking at onboarding and activation efficiency. They may be looking at retention efficiency, expansion, monetization, revenue, sales even. They may be looking at efficiency across the whole, usually they are looking at the whole business.
And is this typically now more focused to SaaS?
So I don't see head of growth or VP of growth as often, but this could actually just be like, I just don't see much beyond SaaS, to be fair.
Right. We live in SaaS.
Right. Yeah. We live and breathe SaaS and software. That's not to say that those roles couldn't or shouldn't exist in other industries or verticals, but what I find in our industry in SaaS and software, usually a VP of growth, they're looking beyond just marketing. Marketing is certainly an area. So we would consider this to be like the awareness and acquisition building branches of a SaaS company. But a VP of growth or a head of growth is also looking at activation, retention, expansion, monetization, revenue. That includes things, again, like pricing, et cetera. And this is where it gets confusing really fast because most, I would say, most earlier stage bootstrap founders, their very first foray into growth usually is some form of marketing. And also, usually pricing is just kind of like thrown together, which understandable. You got to do what you got to do. Right. And then also similarly, activation and onboarding, also similarly, like kind of thrown together. And usually the pressure starts with marketing because you got to get trials, you got to get demos, you got to get leads into your funnel. Mm-hmm. And assuming that they're able to get marketing going and like actually generating trials and demos and leads and things, usually they'll apply all of their growth energy to marketing and acquisition only. And they kind of forget about the other parts of the business. And
right.
When we usually work with a company, what usually ends up happening is they've kind of put all of their eggs in the marketing basket, but it's not cashing out. Like they're not hatching as quickly as they would like. And so mm-hmm. then what happens is they try a lot of stuff. They'll like throw things at the wall with positioning. They'll throw things at the wall with ads. They'll throw things at the wall with different channels. And sometimes they get lucky in those things like work, putting that in finger quotes. But then sometimes they don't. And it's like they're doing all the stuff, but it's not actually yielding anything. And so usually they'll come to us and they'll say, Asia, we need help. We have a marketing problem. But if you've never if you've never worked with a growth person before, may be shocked that like, yeah, okay, we'll look at your marketing, but we're also going to look at your whole business. And actually, like, yes, marketing is a challenge, but you actually have a much bigger issue, and it's net revenue retention, or it's activation, or it's actually your better opportunity is honestly expansion. Like, yeah, like you could optimize marketing to death, but like that's not going to matter if you can't upsell or cross-sell or whatever. Like there's just all kinds of other opportunities to be thinking about. It's not all just marketing. And a lot of this stuff is actually very doable and achievable with a technical founder team. And like, you don't need to, you know, bring in the moon to like reach the stars. Like you can actually like things are very achievable and accomplishable. We already have an episode, right, hopefully out by now, that talks about how there are processes for figuring out how to do stuff. And mm-hmm. a good VP of growth or a good head of growth is going to be able to help you figure out like, oh, we got to pull this lever. This lever would unlock growth for us. How do we do that? What's the process?
Right. So marketing isn't always the priority or just the knob to turn.
Right.
And so that's what we come in and can look across everything. And maybe it's one area you want to tackle first before you turn the marketing knob, right? Because if you have an activation problem, then you probably want to deal with that before you're bringing in a bunch more leads to the top of the funnel.
Yeah. And this is actually exactly how I got into growth. It reminds me, one of my very first clients, this was like back in 2018, because that's how long I've been running Demand Maven now. It's been almost, I think 7 years. It's been next year will be 8 years, if I'm not mistaken. I think we just crossed 7 years. Yeah, just kind of wild. But yeah, so I'll never forget. I remember I was working with a client and they were very, I call them acquisition stressed. That's what I call it whenever a team or a founder is like, we got to get more leads or we got to get more trials. And it's like all they can think about. It's consuming them. It's keeping them up at night. And At the time I was offering more demand generation services, like actual execution work. I'll never forget. I remember like we went through all this, like we did all this stuff, like we executed all these things and we were able to get, like we were able to use like paid acquisition to get trials and also starting to think about our very first campaigns and starting to think about like what kind of content to build and to write. And it dawned on me though that like even if I were to double their trials, they would only be able to convert a very small percentage of them. And this was like a free trial, self-service, B2B. And I think their trial conversion rate was like 8%. Like it was bad. That to us, that's bad. Really, it should be like 20 to 30%. And this was productivity software. So it was extremely competitive. And I just remember I have that aha moment of like, even if I tripled their trials, they would only get 8% of them. And I remember thinking there has to be another way. And that was when I dove into the world of not just onboarding and activation, but also growth, because that's what a growth person thinks about. A good marketer will think about these things too, certainly. Mm-hmm. But that marketer might not then become a master of growth, because that's a different role. It's a whole other job.
Right. Or have the ability to really dive into those areas.
Exactly. They might not even have the bandwidth to be able to do that. In fact, most marketers I know are like totally tapped and they're like, do not add an extra thing to my plate. I will fight you. And I don't blame them because there's so much even within marketing. Like in the fractional CMO work, for example, that I'm doing, I'm like, it's not that I've forgotten. It's more like I'm remembering. I'm re-remembering. I'm like, oh yeah, there's just so much in marketing and it's growing.
Yes. And it's so much day-to-day activities.
Yeah.
In a lot of areas, you know, it's all the things that are running on a day-to-day plus the things that you're doing on top of that are new programs you're building out.
Right. And then like all the experimentation you're doing, you take that and then you multiply it, not just by marketing, but now you multiply it by onboarding and activation, retention, expansion, pricing. Like there's just no way a marketer is one single person on the marketing side is going to be able to handle all of that necessarily unless you hire a separate like head of growth. So whenever, you know, I joke with our founders and our clients whenever I say this or whenever we take on new clients, but like I'll joke and I'll say, you know, we're kind of like your first head of growth and you're either going to love it or it's going to be really uncomfortable because you're going to realize like, oh shit, there's so much I'm missing. Which we've heard that feedback before too, and not like in a bad way, just like in a, oh crap, like in order to ensure Asia and her team are successful, like I need to have this data or I need to integrate these things or, oh, I didn't realize that was a gap that we had and we don't know the answer. Like we're going to have to change our signup flow or we're going to have to make changes to ensure that we can make progress. And sometimes that can be uncomfortable for folks.
Yes, exactly. And to think about, and now I need the resources internally and the bandwidth and the engineering side to make changes to product or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, like we try to smooth it out. Like we try to make it as easy as possible. But sometimes even just like hiring an expert, which I think we're going to record something on this, hopefully in this season, but what it's like to work with an expert and like, how do you ensure that they're kind of getting what they need?
Right.
So this actually brings me to, okay, so when we think about troubleshooting growth, we talked about like, okay, well, what is growth? Now, when it comes to troubleshooting growth, so usually when I'm troubleshooting growth, to me, what that says is growth is slow or, and maybe these are both still technically true, but it could also be we're stuck. Like we're not sure what the next best thing is. We're not sure what to prioritize next. There are a lot of ideas that we have, but there's not really anything that's sticking out to me that's clear. But 9 times out of 10, when we work with companies, growth is slow. Something is fundamentally, I don't want to say like broken, but like something is broken. And either the team can identify it, but they don't necessarily know how to fix it, or they actually don't know what the problem is, like at all. Like they know that they're stuck at 3% month over month, and it's been that way for 12 months. Or sometimes 2 years. We've heard that before too.
Yep.
But they can't figure out why. And there are a lot of theories usually about like what's going on. And for me, the number one mission when troubleshooting growth is if we look at the whole business and we're looking at all of the areas that a SaaS business ultimately grows, because SaaS has a particular set of unit economics that we have to fall within in order for us to be considered efficient. Now, granted, If you don't ever plan on exiting, if you also don't care, if it's a lifestyle business, then technically you don't have to do any of this. Like as a bootstrap founder, especially, like you don't technically have to follow these rules, technically.
Right.
But if you do care about growth and if you care about efficiency, if you care about profitability, if you care about, you know, if you maybe want to sell one day, you are going to have to care about this stuff at some point. But usually the mission is really to come in and identify the root cause or causes. Sometimes it's several things that's causing slow growth. And if there are hypotheses about what's going on, then my job is to verify. It's to say, is that true? Or actually, is that a myth? Or is that like, or maybe it's partially true, but actually there's like this bigger thing over here. And so what we end up doing is parting the clouds on where should you actually focus? What is the actual real problem? And how, realistically speaking, do you address it?
And so you do that by, how do you start? I mean, obviously, you talked about you're looking across the whole business? What does that look like?
Yeah. Well, usually it starts with some form of quantitative analysis. So we are looking at metrics, performance. And this is where, again, this can make people uncomfortable, not because, you know, people are shy about sharing numbers. Most everyone is very transparent. I think I've only ever worked with one company ever in the history of Demand Maven that was like, I'm not going to share you, you know, subscription analytics, which was weird because it was like, well, why hire a growth person if you're not going to like be open, be transparent? Right. Weird. But okay, I'll let you do you. But yeah, this is usually it's like, oh, I don't have product analytics. Should I? It's like, oh, yes, that's a gap for you for sure. So it's rare, but sometimes I'll work with founders who don't have any subscription analytics at all. Like there is no profit. Well, it's like, and maybe not even like a fast spring or like there's like truly nothing. It's like right. a manual credit card process. I'm just kidding. It's not like literally manual, but like I worked with some founders that really don't have anything. The only way that they know the performance of their business is by running like a manual spreadsheet calculation and that's it. Right. And that already is like, okay, well here, you know, there's your problem. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
That's part of it.
Step.
Yeah. totally part of it is to not even have access to this data that you're even semi-regularly looking at. But it always starts with quantitative. So I'm looking at subscription analytics. I'm looking at product analytics. I'm looking at web and marketing analytics, if you have it. Looking at sales performance. I need access to all of the main performance drivers of the business. So for most SaaS, actually don't know if this is true or not. If it's most SaaS companies are self-serve, meaning like PLG, or if they're more sales-led. I don't know if we have a breakdown actually of that. But what I'm looking for, again, is efficiency. And there are very specific numbers and KPIs and benchmarks that I'm looking for, keeping in mind that most benchmarks are floors, they're not ceilings. It's always possible to do better than what the benchmark is. So, for example, the average self-serve opt-in free trial conversion rate for indie founders, according to the research that we did for MicroConf, the State of Indie SaaS Survey, if you're familiar, is 15%. But that is technically low. Like that's actually, like that's the average. It's also, I think, the median as well, which, you know, is more representative of the whole set. But 15% is still not amazing. Like it should really be like 20 to 30%.
Okay. And that's so people coming to the website, 15% are signing up for a free trial?
This is more free trial to paid conversion rate.
Okay.
Now, website performance is a different story. And it's so funny because Rob Walling and I have very different perspectives of this. Rob wants to see like a 10% site conversion rate. And I think that that's so high. But he swears, I think to be fair, though, you know, he swears by it. But like, I think to be fair, he is looking specifically at the marketing site, not just like, because if you include the blog, like most blogs don't convert that well. So like, it's going to bring right. that conversion rate down, obviously. But anyway. I digress. He wants to see a marketing site performance at 10%. I just am like, that's so high. I have seen sites do that well, but they are rare. So rare. Yes. Most sites that I see are in the like 2 to 5%. But anything less than 2% to me is very low. Like marketing site, if we're just looking at the marketing site, less than 2% is like just way too low.
Yeah.
So there are certain benchmarks that I'm leveraging. There are some that you're probably very familiar with. Like I think most founders are probably aware of the free trial to paid conversion rate that like the average is going to be 15%. If it's freemium, if we have a freemium, we need to see at least 3%. Otherwise, it's not efficient. But there are some that founders may not be aware of. So for example, net revenue retention. There's a whole article that I have about this and how it's actually like the sneaky metric that's like totally killing your company and you probably have no idea. But if it's healthy, if it's really healthy, you probably are like, wow, we're growing and it feels so awesome. But it's because you have amazing net revenue retention. And the only way you get there is just by having an incredible pricing strategy, an incredible product. And you've got like the marketing is marketing. Like you've got a good foundation, good engine. It's just doing what it's supposed to do. But net revenue retention is another one that I look at. And there are others. I could go on. But
yeah,
we start here.
You start there.
And there's usually like a few that are not great. And when I say not great, I don't mean like, oh yeah, we're at like 1.6%, but we should be at 2. Not like that. It's usually more like, no, we're at 0.001% and we need to be at 2%. Like it's like that.
Yeah. Something jumps out at you typically.
It's usually like 3 to 4 things. And then I start to look at the overall balance of customers. So for example, how many net new customers are we adding? How many are we losing? And how many expand every month? And what, because that's really the balance that you're actually playing. And then we dig deeper into what's the value of those customers. So on average, what value are we adding? On average, what value are we losing? And then on average, what value, like how, by how much are we expanding, like monetarily? And that tells me a lot about just the flow, like the balance and the flow of what growth is going to look like. Because conventional wisdom says if we're adding more on the top and we're expanding more and we're not losing that much, we're going to grow. If we're losing quite a lot, but we're adding a lot, but we're not expanding very much, we're going to net. We're not going to grow at all. Like it's going to be frozen. Right. And then, of course, the worst scenario is you're not adding that much, you're not expanding that much, but you're losing a lot. That's declining. We're dying. So that sounds so simple, but you'd be surprised at how many founders have no clue or even like are doing like that type of health check. But like, but we do it with money all the time. Like if you think about finances, we are most of us, I would say, are pretty diligent about like what are we spending and what are we like what's coming in. You know what I mean? And like we have the calculation in our minds, but we're not doing that for customers at all.
Yeah, and we do find a lot, right? That to what your point earlier, that sometimes it's hard to be able to get this data, have the right software that's pulling it, ProfitWell, Mixpanel, whatever it is. So a lot of times that low-hanging fruit is setting those things up, making sure your data is healthy and you can report on it.
Totally, totally. And from here, the process, it's funny because like it's usually straightforward. Like that's actually probably the biggest hurdle that we cross. Like that's the biggest chasm is getting the data, making sure we actually have it, because sometimes we don't. Sometimes we're very lucky though, and the team has everything data-wise. Like they're measuring and tracking and you know, most things aren't uncertain.
Right. And we've worked with a lot of companies that have that all together. That's not their problem.
We have also done the opposite. Worked with the opposite where, again, like no solutions really. Like everything is manually calculated. And assuming we can still access the data in some kind of way, because this data exists. It's just like, even if you don't have like a front end for it, there is a way obviously to access it. Most technical founders I find have some type of front end. Otherwise, it's like a manual pull. And then from there, again, there's always something that jumps out because when growth is slow, it's usually pretty clear where that slow growth is happening. Now, the hard part begins, but it's actually my favorite part. And that's the actual troubleshooting. So figuring out like what is the root cause. And this is where we get into more process driven because there are processes to figure out how to solve problems. Even if it's not like, you know, your area of expertise, it's someone's area of expertise. So, for example, if we want to troubleshoot growth for activation, there's a process that we go through to do that work based on my experience, but also leveraging experiences from others. And just from what I've learned, there are there are different ways to approach solving this problem. But we almost always leverage some form of qualitative. And also, again, we're going through either like a workshop or an exercise, or we're doing either deeper data analysis based on what we're finding and what we're hearing. So if we're struggling with acquisition, for example, of course, we'll talk to paying customers, but we'll also talk to churned customers. And ideally, we'll talk to folks who are in consideration phase or possibly even like total strangers, people who fit the ICP, but maybe aren't like they're not aware of you yet. And by gathering all those different sets of data, if you think about it like a science experiment, it's kind of like having a control and then all of our variables. And now we have to figure out, okay, we're pattern matching now, and we're also anti-pattern matching. So what makes a great customer? What makes not a great customer? And like, we should really make sure we create messaging or positioning to actively avoid those folks. But then also, who's a great customer that we lost and why? By doing various pattern matching, we're able to say very confidently, like, oh, okay, yes, if acquisition is your challenge, we've identified that it seems to be, you know, this particular KPI or metric that's struggling. This is our hypothesis now for what we think you should do to improve it. And it can be based on a number of things. And I'm not even going to try to like list out all the things it could be because it's so contextual based on the business. But common patterns end up being like positioning and messaging, not using the right channels, landing page experience, website and marketing page experience. We do get a little bit into product marketing, which I'll talk about in a second, because I know that's something that a lot of people have questions about like how is growth different from product marketing, but we'll totally get into that. And I mean, yeah, like the process goes on, but acquisition is one area for growth. There's also activation, retention, expansion, et cetera. And there are different processes that we go through to troubleshoot, find the root cause. We'll gather qualitative data. We may actually also run surveys sometimes. Like, so for example, when we do pricing analysis and when we help folks figure out pricing, we have to leverage surveys. Like we have to do some type of survey when it comes to sensitivity. And we have to do UX interviews. Like we can't not do UX interviews. It just hits different when you see a stranger navigate your pricing page. Like you have to see someone do that who's qualified, obviously.
Right. And you're interviewing a non-customer.
Right.
Someone out in the wild,
exactly.
But that would understand the context of the business.
Totally. So after the quantitative, then we get into, okay, well, what qualitative insights do we need? And then from there, we'll either decide to dig deeper based on what we find, or there are very clear solutions and also possibly even like a very clear like root cause. And we're able to isolate that. And then from there, help actually like troubleshoot growth.
Right. And then from there, it's now go execute this, solve this, right? What does that look like? And then.
Yeah. So yeah. There are two ways that we handle this. Some teams are very comfortable with the execution. And when we give them the recommendation of like, okay, here's what we think you should do. And we work in very like low fidelity wireframes. Like we're not a design agency, so we're not going to like design these comps necessarily. Now, could we work with a designer and like actually pull something together? We do that all the time. Love doing that. And we've been very fortunate to work with founders that have designers on their teams or are the designer and can like very quickly pull things together. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But so there are some things that like we'll deliver. And if we can work with an expert, like if there's budget to hire someone or maybe we bring someone in, amazing. Like we will absolutely oversee the guidance for that. Otherwise, some teams are just like comfortable with executing on their own. And maybe they'd like our feedback as they do that. So we can certainly oversee and guide the actual implementation process. Otherwise, if there's budget to work together or pair with like whoever's going to actually do the implementation, that's also the idea. That's really the ideal scenario, because then we're able to actually make sure that like the vision for what it is that we want to help execute actually gets realized.
Right.
And I will say like the worst case scenario is we work together, we figure out what's wrong, and then nothing happens, which has happened. And it sucks for all parties, because then it's like, you know, whoever found us or hired us probably feels bad because it's like, you know, we're not able to execute, or something else more pressing comes along and they're just not able to get to anything for like 6 months. And that's understandable. It also sucks because it's like, you know, you obviously want to see every client do like take action and like move forward and get unblocked. We've adjusted the way that we've worked over the years to better support that. But that's the worst case scenario is to know what the issue is, but to do nothing. And I actually tell that to every founder I work with, like, don't hire us and then don't, you know, do nothing.
Right.
We can help with execution. It's just it needs to be obviously like if we need to pull in resources, let's have a conversation about it. But let's be really clear and cognizant of like, yep, here's what the budget is for that. And here's what here's what we think that will cost or whatever. And here's the ROI that we think that we can see from it. But let's not get to that phase and then decide to do nothing, because that sucks for everybody. And we've seen it happen.
Right. Hire us when you're ready to take action.
Right. And also when you're sick and tired of trying to figure it out on your own. I think that's also a really good driver. We've worked with a lot of founders who are like, I'm so sick and tired of trying to think about this by myself. And this is the only thing that they've ever worked on. Like they don't have 100 companies under their belt like we do. And we've seen it all, I feel like. Like every time we do a project and we talk to customers, I'm like, we've talked to you before. Like, I know this industry.
Yes. Yes, it's
true. It's been rare that I've been surprised by a product. Not like in a bad way, just like in a like, oh, okay, yeah, like we've worked in this sector in some kind of way.
Yeah, there's similar sets of problems. PLG SaaS, you know, you're going to look at similar things. And even though every business in it itself is different.
Yeah. Pricing models are different. The ACVs are different. But for the most part, the levers are consistent. And
yeah.
So that brings me to product marketing.
Yes.
So sometimes we get this question, and it's not often, but we'll get this question and it'll be like, okay, well, you guys clearly troubleshoot growth. And I understand that, but then there's also like, I could do more product marketing. And how is that different than like what you guys do? And I love this question. It is also such a tricky one because to me, product marketing fits into troubleshooting growth. So when you think about product marketing, usually what a product marketer is thinking about is how do I position and present this product to this market and do it in a way that makes this like dramatically appealing to them and fit their needs so perfectly that they can't resist. Like it's such a perfect fit for what it is that they're looking for. And that includes the positioning and the messaging, the segmentation, thinking about not just product as a whole, because product kind of sounds like a monolith, but product is made up of features. So now how do we position the features? How do we make sure that that gets distributed in the right places? And how do we ensure that when people see this product, who are the right fit, that they're converting well into whatever funnel we're putting in front of them? And that, when I describe it that way, it's like, that kind of sounds like growth. Isn't that growth? And the answer is technically yes, but a product marketer, and to be fair, like they may actually even also influence pricing. Like they may actually also do competitive analysis to understand like how does this product fit in the marketplace? So the answer is like, yeah, that it is a lot of, certainly it's a part of growth, but it's not all of growth. A product marketer might not necessarily be looking, for example, at activation rates for all segments. They may not be looking at efficiency across the whole business. Like they certainly think like heads of growth or just growth thinkers in general. But I find that they're very much concerned with the aspects of going to market with product. And as they should, product marketers are incredible also. Like they're just some of the smartest people I talk to usually. Everyone is smart. But I love me a good product marketer. But like they are certainly they're a part of the growth story. I find head of growth or VP of growth will also be looking for efficiencies that a product marketer might not necessarily be, I don't want to say be thinking about. It just might be more like they either don't have access to or are privy to. Because to me, when I think about a product marketer, I think about someone who is like obsessive about how is our product and every feature in it being presented to the world. And also, how do we ensure that acquisition-wise, that this is effective? And I find, like, most heads of marketing, for example, have product marketing skills. Like, when they're thinking about, okay, well, what's our go-to-market strategy and how do we position properly and how do we message and blah, yada, 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 they're really doing product marketing. And also, they might need to be thinking about demand creation. Like, how do we make sure we're creating and building a brand that people care about? And also they might be thinking about demand capture. How do we make sure that when people land on this landing page that we actually are going to acquire them? So like, and it converts well. And they're also thinking about channel strategy and acquisition strategy, which a product marketer certainly could and should be thinking about. But to me, a marketer might have a larger breadth of what it is that they're covering. But what's interesting is that even in those scenarios, like a product marketer still may touch those things.
Right.
And
yeah.
And then you compare it to growth. And like, there are some aspects of growth that even like I don't get into as much, but just because it's, you just don't see it as much of a need. It's not as much of a need for the types of clients that we work with. But like, there's a whole world of growth that's like, I hate to call it growth hacking, but Sean Ellis really kind of set the stage for ways to like find efficiency that aren't just like the top level efficiencies. So for example, he tells a bunch of stories in his book, Hacking Growth, And I know growth hacker is like not what we call it anymore, but when you're growth minded or you have this growth mindset in this way, you might find very niche efficiency options. So for example, why aren't people sharing our like referral link as much? That's something that a growth person is going to be like, that's a lever to pull. Like, why aren't we pulling that lever? Right. We should pull that lever. What is blocking people from sharing this affiliates link or whatever? A growth person is also thinking like, I feel like a really good growth person, they're kind of like a behavioral scientist. They're like, what is the desired behavior that I want people to do? And how do I get people to do that as like effectively and efficiently as possible? So a growth person, for example, probably is thinking about like all of the growth loops that exist in a business, things that are not as obvious as like activation or retention or expansion, because those are high level, like more like fundamental, I should say. I wouldn't say high level, but like they're more fundamental to the business. But like a VP of growth is probably thinking about, to some extent, yeah, like sharing referral links is one, but like, what if we optimized the offer for like inviting someone else into our account? Or what is the experience of a new user joining an existing account and then converting in some kind of way? Like a VP of growth is probably like, they're thinking about these really nuanced things that are just so specific. And a product marketer, probably not thinking about that, at least to that level of detail or depth maybe. And then a marketer, I would say maybe if you're lucky, they're thinking about things like this. But my guess is like they're probably more concerned with like more of their role, which is focusing on awareness building and acquisition. And
right.
Sometimes it's activation, but rarely. But even then, that's okay. Like, yes, we love a marketer that focuses on activation too, but it's rare. It's not as common. Maybe more common now, but definitely not the expectation.
Yes. Right. So you're, the work that we do is not just focused in product marketing or in marketing. It's going to touch on all of it.
It's going to touch on all of it. We certainly incorporate product marketing into it. But when I think about how we execute our services, I do think it's more in line with growth in general. And I had this conversation actually. It was a really interesting conversation with Gia. Gia Loudy from Forget the Funnel. It's so funny because we were talking about this recently, and she has always said that, you know, it's funny because we solve similar challenges in with different processes and in different branches, but there's obviously like there's overlap, but they are still fundamentally different practices. Like growth versus product marketing, but they certainly overlap in some areas. And then there's, like I said, some areas of growth that we don't necessarily get into because we're just not working with companies that are at that scale quite yet. Like you get to a certain scale and you start finding like really niche specific optimization and efficiency levers to pull within growth. But at the earlier stages, like less than 10 million ARR, for example, I don't find that as much. Not because I'm not looking, but more just because usually, like I said, there's a more fundamental issue that's like, this is your biggest lever. Let's pull this. But yeah, there is certainly overlap, technically different practices. And I'm sure there's going to be some folks out there who are like, Asia, you didn't like this is actually a better definition of that. And I'm totally open to hearing it. But that's how I see it, I guess, and how I explain it to others who maybe aren't as familiar. Hopefully we did a decent job.
Yeah. And based on what you've been seeing as you're in these companies.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And some of the ways, you know, people might be confused about, oh, yeah, so you're going to come in and do product marketing. Well, no. Or so.
Totally.
I think that's helpful.
Totally. Well, thank you for letting me talk to you about troubleshooting growth.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. We'll do this again soon.
Thanks again. Bye.